They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They're all together ooky, the Addams Family. Their house is a museum when people come to see them. They really are a scream, the Addams Family. Do-do-do-do. 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 Welcome to Truth in Movies. I'm Jay Dreamers. Today we're breaking down the movie, or decoding, I guess you could say, The Addams Family. The original, the first of the movies. And I'm pretty excited about this one. The Addams Family is a way of life to many people, right? There's so many people out there that resonate with like this gothic vibe, this otherworldly vibe, this... I don't know how to say it, but if you vibe with it, you know what I'm talking about. So today we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be checking out the family themselves and comparing them to the modern world. Some of us don't resonate with this modern world. We resonate more with the strange and obscure, anomalous, and weird like the Addams Family. So we're going to break this movie down. Why? Because we're Addamses. So let's start things off by... checking out who brings you this movie. This movie's brought to you by Mount Meru, as always. The place of magic. The place where magic happens. The place where magic comes up out of this plasma volcano featured right here, symbolically speaking. As you can see, they put the dome with the stars above it around the Mount Meru there. And it starts off at Christmas time. Believe it or not, this is a Christmas Day catastrophe movie. There are many, many Christmas Day catastrophes. There's also catastrophes that happen on other holidays or holy days or set apart times, another of which is Halloween coming right up, which is how we will end this movie. But the Carol of the Bells is playing. You know, it's interesting too, this whole idea of caroling when Christmas time is here, right? People get in front of people's houses and they carol. Why? Why do they go around singing from person to person? Well, it didn't always start off as a Christian tradition, as you may have thought. No, actually, many of these songs, when people went to other people's houses, one, they were saying because people were hoping to get a treat in return. People were hoping to be fed. People were hoping to receive a warm drink or something from the people whose houses they visited. Much like on Halloween, the trick-or-treating, going house to house. But this time it was songs that would be sang. And another interesting one, speaking of carols, is many of the songs that were originally sang were actually pagan in origin. And then the Christians adopted this as they went forward with their traditions. So, for example, one of the oldest songs is Hark, I believe it's called Hark, Hear the Welkin Sing, or Hear the Welkin Ring, which the Welkin is the sky, or the firmament, more specifically speaking. And then that turned into Hark the Herald Angels Sing. So these people are singing, Deck the Halls with Boughs of Holly. Isn't that awesome? Everybody knows that song, but what's it about? Why? Why deck the halls with boughs of holly? That's what I want to know. Where do these things originate? Where do they come from? So this is holly. You may have seen it before. It's a little spiky-leafed plant with little toxic berries that you should not eat attached to it. So why is this associated with holidays like Christmas? And it's also, if you go back even further, the holly leaf or the holly branch is also associated with fairies and sprites and pixies and things like that, little people, brownies, etc. Well, to get the answer to that, we have to do a little deep dive. It says here that people brought holly into houses for other reasons aside from just decorative. Sometimes it was to protect the home from malevolent fairies. It was also to allow fairies to shelter in the home without friction between them and the human occupants. So this holly was, they would deck the halls with holly or branches of holly. And it was their hopes that they would be able to keep separate the fairies that might enter the home from the humans. Interesting. What is a fairy anyway? It goes on to say, however, the folklore of the holly is not solely connected with the Yuletide festivities. So holly didn't start off just representing Christianity and Christmas. It goes on to say, like several other native trees, people believed that it had protective properties. there were taboos against cutting down a whole tree, and so they were often left uncut, and hedges were brought in that were trimmed. So people would pull off the branches, and they would decorate with the branches of the trees instead of cutting down the entire tree to begin with, right? Of course, there's the tradition that people ended up cutting down the entire tree and bringing it inside. Holly trees were traditionally planted near houses to offer protection from lightning. European mythology associated holly with thunder gods, such as Thor and Taranis. We now know that the spines on the distinctively shaped holly leaves can act as miniature lightning conductors, thereby protecting the tree and other nearby objects from electricity. Science occasionally catches up with the explanation for what may have previously been dismissed as superstition. So these holly leaves that I showed you, all of these little spikes on them, acted as a form of lightning rods that would keep away electrical activity and hopefully to trap them. We're going to see this come up later on in the movie too, but basically people adorned their homes in the hopes in an electrically charged environment during the time of magic, during the time of mysticism, whenever we've gone through our polarity shift, which is the time to come, so that electricity could not enter and freely go about their houses, right? They would use natural means like different plants and whatnot to protect them from these balls of lightning or these plasmoids that would enter into the home or could possibly enter into the home, just as is talked about in the Old Testament, whenever the Hebrews were told to stay indoors during a particular time as death would go door to door, or the spirit of death, which we'll talk about in a minute too. So they would trap these little fairies or ball lightning in their houses and allow them to be caught up in these plants that they would hang up on the wall. Now here's the Addams family. They want to just pour what looks like some sort of molten stuff onto the carolers down below. They love it. They revel. This is the modern world, the carolers versus the Addams family, right? The Addams family represents those things of old, right? The ancient times, the times long forgotten, or Auld Lang Syne. That's what they represent. We're going to get more into that. And it brings us to the title of the movie, The Addams Family. So we start off by meeting Gomez, the father, the patriarch of the Addams family, and he says, "For 25 years, we've attempted to contact Fester in the great beyond." So they're looking to contact his brother, Uncle Fester, the bald guy that puts the light bulb in his mouth. He's been missing for 25 years, and they're attempting to contact him in the great beyond. Now, on one hand, this is, you know, their family members missing. On another hand, Fester represents something in our very real world that they're trying to contact in the great beyond. Well, there are those entities or government organizations, I should say, secret societies that are right now trying to contact entities in the great beyond, that they're trying to make contact with what lies beyond our firmament on the other side in space or the heavens, etc. And then we meet Wednesday and her brother Pugsley, and she says, "Don't be a baby. I know what I'm doing." She's got Pugsley tied up, and he's about to be shot with a crossbow, right? So let's go back to this real quick. You'll notice that almost all of the Addams family, they all wear black and white, right? There's this black and white symbolism. And as I talked about, they're trying to contact the great beyond, which is, quote unquote, space, or what lies beyond the horizon or beyond the skyline. Pardon me. And so essentially, I've brought this up many different times, black and white often represents those who are space travelers, those who are fractalverse sliders, those who have figured out to bounce from realm to realm and continuously live on forever, basically, as long as they land in the world with the right conditions that are energetically charged, then they too can continue on living as they travel from world to world. And so she says, she often tortures her brother. She's about to kill him. And you'll notice that he has the apple in his mouth. The apple represents plasmoids that fall off of the Tree of Life, or this energetic beam that shoots up from within the plasma volcano called Rupus Nigra. And that beam becomes the burning bush. That beam becomes the apple tree. That beam becomes Yggdrasil, or the Tree of Life, or the other forms like that. So these apples, sometimes they were peaches, sometimes pears, sometimes different fruits, but they were the fruit of the Tree of Life. They were these plasmoids that would drop off. and he's got his in his mouth. And the black and white stripes also indicate a sort of criminal, right? Remember how they used to dress up the criminals in black and white stripes like that? They're seen as criminals, it seems to me, by whatever space organizations are out there. It seems that there may be some rules as to, you know, who's allowed to space travel, who's allowed to slide from realm to realm and whatnot. And so it seems to me, in my research so far, that there are these entities or these beings that bounce from world to world. They travel from world to world, and they may be being chased by actual heavenly cops or angels or space cops, however you want to see that. All right, so she is constantly torturing her brother and vice versa throughout the movie. They do things that would normally kill regular people, right? All throughout the movie. The Addams Family represents superhumans, basically, or humanoids with superhuman abilities, regenerative abilities to regenerate, and they can't die, or it's very difficult for them to die. This is whenever our world goes through this depressurization event and energy fills this world once more, and there's like an influx of energy, terrestrial energy, and energy from the cosmos above. It fills our world with so much energy, and the atmosphere is so energized that our spirit resonates with that, and we become energized too, as does our body. I call it the time of no death. So those people who are alive during this time tend to be known as the immortals, the people who cannot die, or it's very hard to kill them. Oftentimes, the only way that was possible was to do severe damage to the brain or the nape of the neck, back here where the spinal cord is. So they're basically immortals. That's why they can do these things. That's why they can drink poison and walk around with hatchets and play with knives and all this type of stuff, because they can't die. And as you'll see in a bit, they don't feel pain either. And then we meet, that's the same reason why you can have a character that's a disembodied hand. You'll see this in the movies quite often too. Oftentimes in zombie movies, they'll have just a hand all by itself that's moving about. That's because even if you cut off the limbs of a living creature during the time of no death, the atmosphere is so energetically charged or so full of spirit when the glory of God is released upon the world, as it's been known to have been described, that everything comes to life. Energy or spirit is running throughout all things, including, you know, even if it's not connected to your body or whatnot, that hand will be able to move about and act all on its own as the heavenly plasma comes down into this world, and our world is filled with terrestrial plasma as well that brings inanimate objects to life and even restores life to what was once considered to be dead, as we'll see. All right, so Gomez goes before his sleeping wife and he says, "I would kill for her," which is appropriate, right? Let's take a look at Gomez's name and then we'll take a look at his wife's name. Gomez derives from the word gome. It's gome and then os at the end of it. Gome is derived from the Visigothic word guma, which means man, also related to the Latin homo. Gomo, homo, gomo, etc. It all means man. So gomoz or Gomez means strong man, right? The strong man, the superhero, those people who had superpowers, also known biblically as the mighty men or the men of renown. People who had survived apocalyptic events, and therefore, because their environments changed so drastically, so did their character, right? So they were much different than the world that they were thrust into. And then we meet his wife, Morticia. Right? So the man or the strong man is in love with Morticia, which basically means death, right? Comes from mort, which means death. Morticia is another name for an undertaker. Somebody who is an undertaker was somebody who was supposed to take you under down into the hollow recesses of the world after you die, down into what's known commonly in the biblical world as Abraham's bosom or Tartarus, etc. Now, he goes to wake up his wife, but there's sunlight that's coming in through the windows. And he says, "En garde, Monsieur Soleil," and he fights the sun, right? That's because these immortals, these beings who are actually just survivors of their own apocalyptic modern world, there are those of them who are not used to the sunlight, right? So, like, for example, we today, we're used to the sunlight, but if you survive this next cataclysm and then we have an altogether different light source in the world to come, you won't be used to this shining, bright, white ball up there in the sky, and it will burn. It's called photophobia. And these are where the stories of the vampires come from. The vampires had photophobia. Not that they were afraid of the sunlight, but it's that they were sensitive to it. Their skin and their body had not adjusted or hadn't had enough time to adapt to sunlight, so direct light, it would actually burn their skin. The just regular old sunlight would burn their skin because they weren't used to it whatsoever. They were pale people, as are vampires and many other of these types. All right, so Gomez goes up and he plays some golf on his roof, as he usually does, just whacking balls out there into the neighborhood. But he specifically aims for this guy's house as the ball comes flying in and crashes through the window and lands in his cereal bowl. This guy is a judge. And the judge is sitting there eating his bowl of balls, and he starts choking on his balls. And Gomez, he comes out and he says, "Damn you, Adamses!" Which is funny. So you'll see a huge clash between the modern world, represented by the judge, and all of the laws that they bring forth, right? And the Adamses, basically, who don't really go by these types of laws, right? They don't do that. They have their own real, actual magic. They don't need to implement laws. But I think it's funny because the spheres and the balls and whatnot tend to be associated with modern society. And the judges can all choke on their, you know. Anyways, let's check out what the word Adam means, right? It comes from Adama, from the Hebrew, which means ground or earth or soil, you could say, right? Also related to the word homo, which means man, or that word is related to homos, which means the earth, the ground, and soil. So, Adam Oz means strong man, right? So, we got the strong men symbolism once more from the mighty men of old, the men of renown, the people who had superpowers, basically. And you'll see all of the Adamses have basically superpowers, right? They have super strength. They have regenerative qualities so that they regenerate, their cellular structure regenerates and stuff. So they can put up with much more than we can today. He says, "Sorry about the window, Judge." Now, as you'll notice, we start things off with the window breaking. The window breaking symbolism, right? That is shown to us in the movies and almost always, from my perspective, represents the sky itself breaking open. When the sky breaks open, the world, our atmosphere, depressurizes, and it kicks off the apocalyptic events, which, depending on what cycle we're going into, brings about a world filled with magic as the terrestrial beams of light flood our world with energy once more. All right, so we get back to Morticia. She's hanging out in the garden, and she's cutting off the rose actual flowers, right? And she's cutting those off, and then she's just kind of decorating them. So anybody that watches this would just think, oh, well, the Adamses are just demented, and they hate anything that's pretty, etc. No, they're practical, okay? It's that they have knowledge that we have lost, that we don't understand. Like, for example, decking the halls with boughs of holly. Why? Not just because they're pretty. You could deck your halls with all kinds of beautiful flowers that are, you know, I mean, honestly, holly's not that pretty. It's very spiky. It's hard to touch and stuff like that. It's got toxic little berries on it, right? We have lost the meaning. We have forgotten why we do the things that we do. So we wouldn't understand in the modern world the traditions that are to come, the traditions that will be implemented and employed by people in the future. For example, like cutting off the flowery part, which is unnecessary, for using these as little lightning rods, like we were talking about earlier, to repel electricity in your house, right? So she's over there doing something that makes complete sense to the rest of her family. But us in the modern world would say, oh, how terrible. Like, oh, she must hate beautiful things or whatnot. No, they're more practical, right? It's the world that we live in that is senseless. It's the world that we live in where we would just pluck up a flower and just kill it and give it to somebody because it looks pretty, instead of giving them seeds so they can plant their own flowers and gardens, right? So he says, "This very night, our 25th seance." And you can see that him and Thing are playing chess. The chessboard itself, or the checkerboard floor, is also symbolic of quote-unquote space travelers, or people who have gone from one realm or one world to a different one. Right? For example, Alice in Wonderland, things like that. She says, "Don't torture yourself, Gomez. That's my job." So another witty, funny joke. Oh, they're into some sadomasochism, right? And it's supposed to be a joke or whatnot. But let's think about the reality, right? If you lived during the time of no death and there was an influx of new chemicals in the atmosphere and your spirit and your body was electrically charged and amplified, right? You might not actually feel any pain. And the only way that you could feel some sort of physical sensation, right, was to actually do things that today would hurt, that today, you know, might injure your skin or whatnot. But remember, if they lived during the time of increased atmospheric electrical energy, right, it's running throughout their bodies as well. They're becoming energetically amplified. And that electricity has the potential to actually relieve pain or to cut off the sensors that that tell you that your body's being hurt. Now, if the body knows that it can regenerate very quick and therefore heal, and therefore if you cut yourself for something minor, that it's not that big of a deal, it might not decide to send any signals to your brain saying, hey, be careful of that because, you know, it's a minor injury. It doesn't really hurt that much, right? Because your skin's going to regenerate extremely fast. There's something called electrotherapy for pain relief that people use now. It's this exact same thing. People run electricity through their bodies. Also, during the depressurization of our world or during the apocalypse, many different gases are released and created during the process, the alchemical wedding between the earth and the sky. One of those is nitrous oxide, right? The nitrogen in our atmosphere mixed with the bombarding ionized oxygen that shoots up from plasma volcanoes, and it creates nitrous oxide. So you can imagine huge pockets, huge gas clouds of nitrous oxide that you know, just pass through certain neighborhoods or areas. And if you breathe those in, one, people will laugh a lot, like the Joker type characters who are also pasty, pale skinned, you know, people or whatnot. Also portrayed as sort of the clowns, right? The killer clowns from outer space symbolism and all that type of stuff. The Anunnaki type beings. It will cause people to laugh a lot. They cause them to not feel any pain as well, as it is used today. All right, next up we meet these two characters. One, this guy's the lawyer for the Adams family, and I think this is his wife. He says, I'll get the money. I'll get the money. I have a plan. So there are those people who are trying to befriend the survivors in order to try to figure out how to get to all of their wealth, right? The survivors naturally inherit wealth if they're from a certain area. That area is the North Pole or the Garden of Eden, which is said to have and be filled with various types of precious gems and rubies and emeralds and gold itself, as well as other elements too, possibly radium and some other things too. So his whole goal is to try to get into the vault inside of the Adams's house. The Adams's house represents Mount Meru, where the gods land, right? Where they all convene, Mount Olympus, etc. And we'll get to the vault, and we'll talk more about that in just a second. But first, he says, the old business. Now, these are the people who will basically inherit the world, the survivors of the apocalypse, even those who arrive from other worlds that arrive here during our depressurization cycle, right? They can land here too. So we've got two factions represented in the movie The Addams Family. We've got one, the survivors who are native-born, those from here, like us, who survive, right? We inherit superpowers and whatnot. But then we also have those who come in from other places, right? So for example, let's say that we go through an apocalyptic scenario and you see all of NASA just launching all their missiles, Elon Musk and his crew, they all leave. They go to some other world. Well, they're going to represent the modern man who acts as a god in some new realm that has just suffered a catastrophe. But then you have those who have already survived in that new realm. These are the two types and two classes or families of gods that typically war against one another for territory and rights and things like that. And you can see that he's fencing too. So that also represents putting up fences, an actual fence or boundary, right? The boundary makers, the people who put up the boundaries and establish lands and territories and things like that. And of course, business, right? Bankers, dealing with bankers and talking about business and the people who pretty much kind of own the world as they produce offspring after offspring and their offspring produce offspring. And they all get like a portion of that basically. So they become very rich. All right. So Morticia gives the friend a finger trap. She's donating it to charity, which she will later on buy back. And she says, a finger trap from the court of Emperor Wu. That's really interesting, too. So I looked up Emperor Wu, and it says that the Emperor Wu, or the dynasty that he ruled in China, he worshipped a divinity called Tai Yi, which is interesting, too. It says the emperor even went so far as to construct a house of life where he could call on this god or this divinity named Tai Yi, which is interesting. So he created this house of life where he would call on these particular gods to come, and he would bathe in the presence of those gods, and it would restore his health, basically. It would rejuvenate him as a type of impromptu fountain of youth, right? And it says here that Tai Yi means life energy, or life energy flow, or the flow of life energy, aka plasma, aka energy, like actual energetic electrical qualities. Supreme movement also means supreme health. So this god Tai Yi was some form of god that was associated with supreme health. So he would build these houses where he could go and bathe and get his health back, basically. All right, so this guy, Tully, the lawyer, he's looking through the books. He knows there's a secret passage he has to pull out, and he's trying to find the vault, the Adams's vault. He pulls out this one, and it's gone with the wind. He pulls it open, and of course, all the wind, the book comes to life, just like in the Neverending Story. What the movie is telling me, the breadcrumb that I've picked up here, is that all of the books are real. All of the stories are true. There's no such thing as fiction. Fiction is just comparing the modern world with worlds that we've forgotten about, or worlds yet to come that we have not experienced yet. It's all true, and it's all repetitive. It's on a cycle. So everything that we read about and talk about, especially here on this segment, stems from substance. It stems from true stories, right? Not just completely made up gibberish and lies. There's truth to this. This is what attracts us to these types of movies. The more truth contained therein, the better the movie is. So he opens it up, Gone with the Wind. Another reference to the apocalypse and, you know, the dome cracking open and then the atmosphere depressurizing, which creates, you know, supersonic type wind speeds. All right, so he comes in and he goes back to his office and he meets his new partner in crime. She calls him Mr. Alford, and her name is Mrs. Craven. So if we look up these names real quick, his name, the lawyer's name, is Alford. Al just means God. That's all it means. It means mighty leader, right? Not the God, but a strong leader, somebody who is basically a type of survivor or superhero or somebody with some kind of power. Ford comes from the Proto-Indo-European word Bertos, which means crossing. So the crossing of the gods, or the crossing of the El. So that's another reference to Nibiru. It's another reference to these portals and stargates, or terrestrial doors, where humanoids like us enter in or leave and go to other worlds. If we look up the woman's name, Craven, it's directly related to Krav, which means defeated or cowardly as well. So so check this out. There's those of us who stay and we survive. When we meet, or when those who have survived in the past meet the newcomers who have come in from some other world, you know what I mean? Like let's say we're on a different world and then, you know, we see Elon Musk and the NASA astronauts, and they all land on our world after our apocalypse or whatever, they would be considered chickens and cowards because they ran away from their worlds to, you know, they didn't want to face the ultimate bad guy or the ultimate evil, which was the apocalypse. So oftentimes they're sort of referred to in the movies as cowards and chickens and runaways and things like that. Now we meet his mom, and you'll notice, or we'll meet Uncle Fester's mom, basically, or the woman who's pretending to be Uncle Fester's mom. Everybody's looking for Uncle Fester. She had found him many years ago, but he had amnesia. So this woman with the red hair and the pale white face, by the way, she represents royalty. She represents the other class that has left, and they didn't live during the red sky. They lived during the blue sky. So they haven't grown to be gigantic in stature. They're not really the giants or anything. And typically, you'll see that they're in nobility or the noble class all throughout history. Oftentimes with pasty white skin and blazing red hair. all throughout history, right? These people are related to the nobles and have noble blood or blood from the survivors for a reason. That's why we often see this in our cultures, that the red-haired people tend to be in charge and related to those beings that looked kind of clownish to us, the survivors. These people came from space or the heavens, right? Where they don't have a point of focus that is changing the pigmentation in their skin constantly. They just become pasty white, like many other creatures out there in the heavenlies that drop down. Also, the mother symbolism, too. I'm going to get into that here in just a second. But, like, for example, the Queen of Hearts and the mother symbolism and the red, the color red, right? Not just for their hair, but for something else we'll talk about here in a minute. You can see Uncle Fester, he was called Gordon, right? She gave him the name Gordon before they realized who he really was. He's got super strength. She cannot do this. None of the regular humans could do this. They took him by the neck and he flips him upside down with one hand. That's super strength, right? These people represent a family of superheroes, like the Incredibles, except for this is like a gothic version of the Incredibles, right? The Incredibles are like flavored and sprinkled with, you know, all the things that we think are beautiful and all the things that we think are attractive and whatnot. But the reality is often much different, right, than the fantasy. So when we look at the Addams Family, they're retelling our history from a more realistic perspective. They're saying, hey, don't edit out all of the blood and the gore and, you know, all these things that happen and all the scary stuff. They're saying you need to include that because that's equally beautiful. That's equally a part of the life that we're headed into and where we came from. She says, Gordon and I enjoy a special relationship. She's his mother, right? So let's check out Gordon. She named him Gordon. Gordon comes from gordos, which means or implies stubborn and heavy. It also implies slow, heavy, and tired, which to me speaks about the giants, right? Not just the giants, but right now, if you survive from the modern age into, and you make it past the next apocalyptic cycle and the sky depressurizes and all that stuff, you're dense. We're more dense right now than humans that will be born into the next world. So this is a reference to one, those giant beings that move or seem to move much slower in comparison to all the small people that live here today. Gigantism will be restored to our world. But also the density just of our skin and our bones and everything is much more dense than those people who will be born into the apocalypse. That's why Superman has bullets that just bounce off of him and stuff because he has dense skin. He's represents somebody from another world that had other atmospheric conditions. Also, Gordon means spacious, specifically a spacious fort or a place to live, right? So it's another reference to the Mount Meru, the Garden of Eden. The word Gordon is even very similar to the word garden, right? Somebody of the garden, which are the surviving class, those people that head over towards Yggdrasil and hide within it during Ragnarok. Now, she's like, down, Gordon. And he's like, mother, because he wants to, you know, mess this dude up. And now we're going to talk about the mother, right? That redheaded woman. The redheaded mother is often portrayed. This is Mrs. Voorhees. She was actually the original bad guy in the very first Friday the 13th. Jason Voorhees was not, right? It was his mother that was the serial killer and the psychopath. And she happened to have blazing red hair too. She also raised a son who is very pale skin, bald headed, and kind of weird looking too. If you look at how Jason Voorhees looked originally, he was pretty much deformed. And we'll notice a trend here, right? With those people, the closer you get to these areas of high energetic terrestrial discharges, there's also things happening with radiation, right? Different elements are being activated, and there's a lot of radiation that tends to be present. Many people can handle it, those survivors, because of all the regenerative qualities that we have in our skin and stuff. However, some people, it affects them differently, especially as you have an increase in elastin and collagen in your skin, right? Some people may be the anomalous exceptions where their skin sort of drifts and it looks like they've had a stroke or something. And they're directly related to having superpowers, being super strong, but their skin is sort of melty looking and weird and strange, just like the Toxic Avenger right here. All right, so then they open up this chest and they see all of these doubloons, these gold pieces, right? If you look closely at these doubloons, let's zoom in on this. If you look closely at these, you'll notice that many of them were just circles with a little X right there in the middle, because that's where the gold came from, was the place that was circular and had an X, which was the Garden of Eden, right? Even the Bible says that the Garden of Eden was full of gold, or that these rivers were associated with containing a lot of gold, a lot of precious metals and elements and gems and things like that. Now, they find out that he was hiding the gold from them, and he says, there's more, there's a fortune, but nobody can get to it. Now remember, the gold is hidden in a vault inside of the Adams' house, underneath their house specifically, and their house represents Mount Meru, or the Garden of Eden, or Hyperborea. And underneath their house would be inside of the Garden of Eden, or the hollow recesses to our world, or the inner earth, right? And he says, there's more, but nobody can get to it. This represents a truth of our world. There's actually real places, according to various myths and legends. One in particular is called the Cave of Treasures. The Cave of Treasures tells us very little about the supposed physical attributes of the cave, said to be situated in the side of a mountain below paradise, and nothing about Adam and Eve's way of life there. But in the book of Adam and Eve, the whole of the first main section is devoted to details of the physical cave. So there's something called the Cave of Treasures, and it's related to the Garden of Eden. It's related to the story and the history of Adam and Eve, which is not told in the Bible. And it says that whenever Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden, that they went into this cave of wonders, this cave of treasures that was filled with precious gems and gold and incenses and things like that. Beautiful smells. So it continues on and says, the Cave of Treasures, which was given to the Book of the Order of the Succession of Generations, there is probably a double allusion, namely to the book as a storehouse of literary treasures, and to the legendary famous cave in which Adam and Eve were made to dwell by God after their expulsion from paradise, which is said to contain gold and frankincense and myrrh, and it was thus commonly called the Cave of Treasures. So let's imagine this, right? That paradise was actually inside of the earth, that it was deep into the hollow recesses of our world, where there was many legends indicate that there is an actual paradise under our feet. So when they were kicked out, they came up out of the earth, and they went out and spread out there, right? So they came up out of this mountain. Now, if we read in this book called the Book of Adam and Eve, it says here, and to the north of the garden, there was a great sea of water, clear and pure to the taste, like unto nothing else. So something related to the Garden of Eden was this great sea of pure water, crystal clear. This, I believe, is that sea. The sea right here in the middle of the world that surrounds Mount Meru. This is said to be, this is the great Mara, or Mari, or Mary, Mother Mary, that gives birth to this rock, this light that comes up out of the world. And this is Camp Crystal Lake, where Jason resides too. And it was said that whoever washes in these waters would actually, the waters would give them regenerative, just in that lake alone, would regenerate their skin, and it would act as the fountain of youth. In the book of Adam and Eve, it goes on to say, through the clearness thereof, the clearness of this crystal clear lake, this crystal clear water, so clear that you could see through it, one may look into the depths of the earth. And when a man washes himself in it, he becomes clean, and the cleanness thereof, and white of its whiteness, even if he were dark. Well, that's interesting too, especially with you know, the Adams family being so pale and pasty skinned and stuff like that. It goes on to say, talking about God, it says that he made our father Adam dwell in the western border of the garden, because on that side of the earth was very broad or flat. And God commanded him to dwell there in a cave, in a rock, the Cave of Treasures, below the garden. Below the Garden of Eden was where this Cave of Treasures existed. Goes on to say, command thy sons, so he's talking to Adam, command thy sons and order them to embalm thy body after death with myrrh, cassia, and stacte. And they shall place thee in this cave, wherein I am making you dwell to this day, until the time when your expulsion shall take place from the regions of paradise to that earth which is outside of it. And whoever shall be left in those days shall take the body with him, and shall deposit it on the spot which I shall show him, and in the center of the earth. For that place shall redeem, in that place shall redemption be effected for thee and for all thy children. So in that place, according to the book of Adam and Eve, there was a mountain with a cave at the top of it where Adam was buried. He was embalmed purposefully to be left there next to an eternal flame, basically, so that when that flame of the earth, or whenever that plasma or that energy reversed and comes up out of those cavernous areas, that he would be rejuvenated, that he would return to life, that his cells would regrow from his very bones. And it also mentions the location at the center of the earth, right? So in our world, that's in the middle of the earth, or the North Pole, the top of the world. Goes on to say, they took Adam's body up to the top of the mountain and buried it in the Cave of Treasures. So they bury all of the patriarchs in this particular cave. It's exactly the same cave as the Cave of Wonders that's portrayed in Aladdin. When they go in it, they say, touch nothing, because it's full of treasure, right? This is the Adam's basement. This is the Adam's house, right? Touch nothing but the lamp. The lamp is symbolic for just the light. Just the light itself. It's the light of God. It's the light of the earth. It's the terrestrial beam of energy that shoots up through these caves. Touch nothing. Why? Well, it's cursed. If you want to say cursed, it's electrically charged. If you touch it, you could get electrocuted. It's protected, right? So if we take a look at Aladdin in the Cave of Wonders, it's basically Mount Meru symbolism with the beam shooting up out of the top of it, right? Here's little Aladdin way down here. He has to cross the waters, which is where this magnetic mountain is resting in the middle of this crystal clear lake, crosses over the waters and gets to the top where the beam of light comes out. And then, of course, when he gets up there, he's surrounded by the blue beam. And that's where the genie is that grants him wishes and stuff like that. All right, so we come back to the Adams' house. There's an electrical storm. Oops. And about the electrical storm, they say this is seance weather. So they're going to perform a seance to try to contact the spirit of their dead brother. They think that he might be dead. Either they want to reach out to Fester and contact him. It's seance weather. So why is this seance weather? Why is this good weather to bring about the spirits? Because of the electricity, because of the, what do you call it? Whenever there's like a lot of water in the air, precipitation. There's like a lot of vapors in the air, a lot of water. It's all misty and stuff like that. Anyways, it's perfect weather for spirits, okay? Because they're electromagnetic in nature. So they say it's seance weather. They get together. They're holding hands. The mom comes out, or grandma. Fester Adams. And you'll notice that she has a crystal ball, right? Oftentimes, soothsayers and whatnot had a crystal ball. What is the crystal ball and how does it work? How do people scry? How do they look into and determine the future and prognosticate and predict and stuff like that? How do they divine from a crystal ball, right? Well, here's an example of lightning in a jar, or plasma in a jar, right? This is a sealed off jar. It's got a little bit of wire wrapped around it, and people ran an electrical current through it and created actual entities inside of the jar. Pixies, you could call this, sprites, spirit, wisps, etc. And sometimes, if it's focused, it'll create a little ball, a little self-contained plasmoid. When it's less focused, then it'll create a toroidal field, or a little donut type shape, right? And it's caught in the jar, lightning in a jar, basically. And it can move, too. So you can see this guy's holding this little electrical device. When he moves it, it follows it, right? It follows these electrical fields, these electrical paths. Now, this one right here, it actually moves around in a circle right around those wires. It becomes trapped, just like whenever you deck the halls with boughs of holly or whatnot, right? They talked about trapping or keeping separate the fairy people from the human inhabitants of the house, right? This is old world technology, you could say, right? These are things that have been lost to us today because we don't have that much electricity in our world today. We have to generate it artificially instead of it just being abundant everywhere. All right, so there's your spirits. There's your catching your fairies and dreams in a jar, like from BFG and stuff like that. We go back to Morticia. and the seance. And they say, if you're here, knock three times. Did you hear that? Three knocks at the door during this electrical storm, right? With the crystal ball, the plasma ball, etc. Which reminds me of Stephen King, The Tommyknockers. There's a poem from the book. Late last night and the night before, Tommyknockers. Tommyknockers knocking at the door. I want to go out, but I don't know if I can, because I'm so afraid of the Tommyknocker man. Right? There was these entities known as the Tommyknockers. Now, the Tommyknocker comes from actual legends, not just Stephen King. He didn't make that up. The Tommyknockers were said to be something along the lines of like dwarves or elves or leprechauns, things like that, that lived down in the cavernous openings of our world, in the caves. And miners would talk about the Tommyknockers all of the time. They would be known to knock on things, or it would sound like a knock. Okay, I believe that it's combustion. I believe that it's gases that are igniting, becoming ionized, then they combust, right? So they make a pop, they make a sound. And of course, if they're right next to a solid object, they'll knock as they combust. But these were the Tommyknockers, and the legend has it from the miners that they would hear these knocking sounds or popping sounds, and they would either lead them to veins of gold or other precious metals, because obviously this is where you have the electrical energy that's going to be attracted to those types of metals. Or they would be precursors to cave-ins, right? Whenever there's earthquakes and stuff, because all those gases are being released and it shifts the earth and stuff, and there's cave-ins down there inside of the caves. So they hear another knock. Doom, doom, doom. Three knocks at the door, which reminds me of actually the three booms that I expect people will hear that come from the anode mountain, the cathode mountain, and Mount Meru itself. Three explosions at the top of the world that signify the arrival of the apocalypse, basically. It says, he's at the door! He's at the door, just like death, right? You ever wonder that? Why does it always have death knocking at the door? I mean, I know it's symbolic, like, hey, death's coming your way, or whatever, right? But where does that come from? It comes from the Tommyknockers. It comes from the spirit of the Lord, or the spirit of death, or however you want to call it. Just like in the Old Testament, where the Hebrews, right, they were told by God that there would be a great killing of all the non-believers. And that the Hebrews were told, hey, during this set-apart time, stay in your houses, stay indoors, lock your windows, shut your shutters, do not allow the spirit of the Lord to come in. As a matter of fact, paint your door with something that would repel it, which is in those days, the blood of the lamb, right? It's all about energy and repelling energy or attracting energy. This was dangerous because if you went outside and there was a Tommyknocker right there, you could get zapped and become electrocuted to death, right? Whenever the spirits are flooding around and there's plasma flying all over the cities and stuff, right? And a huge ghostly apocalypse. So people would try their best and use different methods to repel electromagnetic forces. For example, that's the origin of this good luck horseshoe, right? Putting this horseshoe over your door. This was the same as painting your door with the blood of the lamb and other things, and decking it with different spiky plants acting as lightning rods. They would put this on their doors, but this was not just a horseshoe. It was just the shape of that, right? What it came from was the horseshoe-shaped magnet, right? It was the magnet that repelled the plasma that was self-contained and wandering and floating about, attracted to different things in our world, right? So it would come to the door, but it would skip these particular places that had things like this on it, right? It would be repelled by magnets, or some people, especially if you think about this, right, especially whenever the world depressurizes, the atmosphere becomes very vaporous and wet, right? Very vaporous and wet. So if you were to pour salt across your door, it would act as a conductor because it would become wet and it would become damp and stuff like that, and allows electricity to pass through it and flow through it. So people can actually create electrical circuits using salt, which is why salt is used to try to redirect the path of evil spirits to keep them away from your door. People pour salt, or they'll pour a protective circle around themselves, etc., with salt and things like that. Or they'll create little circuits on their door, which became wreaths, right? And then little bows and stuff like that. All of these acting as little energetic barriers to keep out the plasma that was knocking at the door, or the Tommyknockers. They said that Fester was found in Miami, tangled in a tuna net. So Fester, who you'll see later on, is electrically charged. Okay. Matter of fact, all of the atoms are electrically charged. Or it's implied that they have a strong spirit, as we've talked about before, right? So Fester specifically represents tubes of plasma or tentacles of plasma that come down into our world, electricity that gets caught in circuitry or trapped in various forms of circuitry, which is where the dream catcher comes from, right? So they would create these little circuits, especially when the air was vaporous. Keep that in mind, right? Because whenever you wet things down, it'll allow the electricity to travel through it much quicker. As long as there's, foreign elements in there, not pure water, but any type of, contaminated water or string that's wet, stuff like that, it'll act as a circuitry. So these ghosts or these electrical entities or phenomenon would come across something like this, be attracted to, typically they'll put like some sort of a domed or a spherical object right there in the middle, which could attract the electricity, because electricity is attracted to domes. It'll attract it and then it'll spread out and get trapped in this little circuit. And they even have a secondary one down there just in case. And they would hang these over the baby's crib so that the plasma could not go down and hover over the baby's face, feeding off of its gases as it breathes and, whatever babies do in their sleep, to protect the child, basically. And I believe that they were probably made of metal initially, right? It makes sense to me that the original dream catchers were actually metallic in nature, to act as a type of circuit to trap that plasma. Now, we get back to Dr. Pinder Schloss, and she says, it was just last month during Hurricane Helga. And you'll notice she has the scimitar as the symbol there too, to divide, to separate, to divide and conquerors. So they found Fester during a hurricane. So this whole hurricane represents the world storm that comes during the depressurization of the atmosphere. The sky, it was black, like pitch. This is mentioned in the Bible. This is mentioned in the Quran. This is mentioned in many different forms of ancient literature and religious scriptures and whatnot, where the sky is said to turn black during the apocalypse, right? The sky, the light of the sun disappears. It goes out, right? The sky was black like pitch. The waves, they were walls of doom. So they're talking about the waves of the ocean and Great Lakes and stuff like that, welling up and not falling down, because that's what happens whenever you have an increased buoyancy factor in our world due to all that displaced atmosphere that we just lost. The world becomes very buoyant and all of the water just floats up. Any wave that started to build would just keep on building, and it would go up and up and up and up. You'd have waves that are miles tall. She says, Fester Adams, home at last. And he goes, well, at least for a week. Right? That's because he represents the apocalypse, right? Or the change, the shift from our world to the next, which happens for about a week. Okay. It's like the week-long festivities that people usually have during the solstices and equinoxes. He says, I feel like we're children again. Tag, you're it. So one, whenever we go through this energetic shift, we become revitalized. We're tired in this world. We sleep for like a third of the day. We eat. We're consumers. We need to do that to get energy. We have to like basically siphon off of other living things and eat their life force to add it to our own so that we can have energy, right? And but whenever the world becomes electromagnetically charged and amplified, you feel like a kid again. You've got all your energy right back. You know what I mean? Like you're constantly active. You don't have no need for sleep and probably don't need to eat that much either. But another thing is about this game. He says, tag, you're it. It is a reference. Those two letters, that word, it, I believe is a reference to the plasma that comes down from above, the cosmic electricity that comes down and fills our world. People call it the Kraken and Cthulhu and other types of names and stuff, but commonly it's called it, especially in Stephen King's books and stuff, right? It. And what it does is it possesses people. It amplifies their existing spirit. They become plasma possessed. So just like in the movie Fallen with Denzel Washington, certain spirits can actually jump from person to person if they just touch them, because they transfer that electricity, just like you transfer electricity when you rub your feet on the carpet and you touch a doorknob, right? You're transferring that spirit or transferring that electricity. So they go down into the basement, into the vault under the house, represented by Hod Mimi's Holt, or the trunk of the Tree of Life. They go down underneath the Adams' house. As you can see, in their house, they have all these tiny little lights, little fairies, basically. Little balls of light, little flickering plasmoids is what that symbolizes. Because that's what you can expect to find in a cave that's electromagnetically charged, is all these little balls of light wandering about. All right, so they go all the way down to the bottom. There's fog everywhere as well, representing the pressure differential, right, between the surface world and the underworld. And he says, ah, it smells like a tomb. It smells like a tomb. And he purposefully says a tomb because this is the tomb of many of the ancient gods, okay? Many of these various gods that were symbolized by the light, okay? This was their resting place. They died. They were born in a cave, and they died in a cave, okay? Just like Adam. All these people were born in caves and died in caves. I mean, I don't know if Adam was born in a cave, but he definitely died in a cave or was buried in one. Anyways, my point is, this is the cave of like Osiris. This is the cave of Zeus. This is the cave of Jesus, etc. And it's also seen as the tomb or the entrance into the underworld where Gomez acts as the undertaker or the person who would be the ferryman, the person who ferries you or acts as the ferry or the great world ferry. Who ferries you across the undersea waters. There's a whole ocean down below us, basically. The sea, your second home, right? So there's waters down below us. Now imagine, if there's another world down below us, and it's hollow, and there's all these other worlds, and all the legends are true, and there's water below us, and then it means you have to pass through those waters to get to their world, which means they have waters above. Right? Just like the ancient legends talk about us having waters above. The sea, your second home. Electricity can thrive in salt water. Okay? It can thrive in salt water because there's all those little particulates in the ocean water and salt and all that stuff that allows and acts as electrolytes that allows the electricity to flow through the ocean. So the ocean can have ghosts. The ocean can have spirits. The ocean, people can see and have, and there's many reports of people having seen strange lights, gloomy and anomalous looking, strange, different types of lights and different colors of lights that just rise up out of the ocean or various lakes and stuff too. But if it's pure crystal clear water, electricity cannot pass through it. There's no particulates in the water for it to sort of jump from grain to grain or whatever. So that lake in the middle that I was showing you earlier, Camp Crystal Lake, right? Any of that electricity would dance upon the top of it or it would look to be walking on the water. It can't go down. It cannot sink down into that crystal clear lake because it's pure. It's totally pure. So the electricity cannot go down into it. So they're underneath the catacombs of the world, where the pillars are, the earth pillars that support and hold up the surface world. They're going down deeper and they find the vault. They go into the vault and Fester looks around and there's these three hallways. To me, this represents the Cave of Treasures, but specifically underneath Yggdrasil. Yggdrasil, or the Norse Tree of Life, is said to have three main roots or root systems, right? So if that beam of light retracts, the tree disappears, the roots also disappear, they go down into the bowels of the earth, you would be left with three caves, three paths to take. Which one do you choose, right? You'll see this in the movies a lot, where they're under the world, or they're in the earth, and there's these three different tunnels, and you know, which tunnel do we choose, or whatever. All right, so they show us the graveyard. They have a graveyard in their like backyard. And he says that their house contains, or their land contains, the primeval ooze, quicksand, fumes, toxic waste. And they're saying like, oh, it's so beautiful. This is great, right? Because these are the things that they associate with the world that they're from, or the world conditions that they're from, which is something we are going to have to get used to once the conditions of our world change, right? The primeval ooze is in reference to a couple of things. One, the plasma itself is sort of like an ooze, but plasma or electricity can give off a viscous type of material dependent upon what type of atmosphere or gases it's passed through, right? It can actually bleed. It can leak off viscous liquids and create liquids too. Quicksand, that's when the world's shaking, right? Worldwide earthquakes create quicksand as the waters below rise up. Fumes are all of those gases that are released, right? I mean, people know this in the modern world. They talk about the permafrost releasing gases and stuff. Well, the rest of the Earth contains and keeps gases down too, especially the magnetic barrier or the electromagnetic barrier that runs around and down into our Earth. That's repelling a lot of gases, pressurizing the inside of our world. And toxic waste, just like we talked about the Toxic Avenger and stuff like that. So they go to the school. The school's having this little talent show. And Morticia's walking with one of the teachers who's very concerned about Wednesday. And she says, this month, our theme is heroes, people that we love and admire. So they show you this example of modern heroes, right? She says, look, see, Susan Ringo has chosen the president. And she's supposed to be impressing Morticia, who looks over and says, have you spoken to her parents? Right? Like, this is all bad news. All the things that the schools are teaching in this movie, according to the perspective of the Addams Family, are terrible. They're bad. They're garbage. They're things that it's the opposite, right? And this is the polarity shift that we live in right now. Everything's backwards of what it should be. Down is up. Up is down. Good is bad. Bad is good, which has been predicted. This is prophecy that we are now living in. We're seeing these things come to pass. You also notice the difference between Morticia and the teacher, right? What they're wearing, what their hairstyle is, things like that. And then they meet one of the kids and she says, isn't he adorable? And Morticia's like, what is he, a lizard? And she says, an elf. He's an elf. So she doesn't recognize that he's an elf because that's not what elves look like, okay? That's what cartoons look like. That's what we have, unfortunately, painted the elven race as, but the El, the Ilu, those who are offspring of the ancient quote-unquote gods or the elven race or the mighty men of old or the ancient survivors or giants, etc., they didn't look like little Keebler elves. They didn't make cookies inside of trees or whatever. That's all cartoonified. It's an ancient game of telephone that is stretched from the beginning of the last apocalypse all the way until the present day. So it falls to us to sort of reinterpret these things to find out what their origins are, right? She doesn't recognize this kid. She's like, is he a lizard? I mean, that's kind of cool if you made him a lizard. She's like, no, he's an elf. Okay, well, that's not what elves look like. So all the kids get up there and they're singing this song. You'll notice this this also in the background, you see it's sort of like a keyhole right there. You notice that path leading to the little circular area? That's the keyhole symbolism. And they're up there singing, getting to know you, getting to know all about you. But all the kids are just singing this forced song that's just gibberish. You know what I mean? It's not really about anything. All of these are elves in between the flowers. These are supposed to be really tiny little creatures, the elves, right? But they're not. They're not tiny at all. So the Addams Family's watching this and they're like, wow, right? Like, what is this? What are we watching? This is pointless, meaningless. It's not true at all. Like, they know about the original origins. Meanwhile, we go back to the house. This lady's trying to break into the house to try to find the Cave of Treasures, right? Which many people, nobility, has sent expedition after expedition to try to find this Cave of Treasures so they can accumulate their wealth, but even more importantly, so that they can extend their lifespans, right? So she goes to the house, which is overgrown with these vines and whatnot, which, by the way, the vines wrap around her and they become to life. And you'll see this in many different movies, oftentimes horror movies, where the vines wrap around people and they have like a mind of their own and they just grab on and they choke them, just like in Harry Potter, the Devil's Snare, right? This is because this is what happens to the plants whenever the world is electromagnetically charged or electrically charged. The atmosphere is electrically charged. It encourages gigantic growth of all things, including plants, especially when the sky turns red, right? The plants thrive under red light and they grow very quickly, right? This is shown to us in the movie Noah, right, which was the recounting of the story of the biblical flood, where all those plants just shot up out of the ground super quick. Plants growing very quickly, very fast, to gigantic sizes means that there are new dangers to us who remain small. The us who have already passed the point of puberty or first puberty, and we kind of keep a smaller stature as the rest of the world around us gets very large very quick. just like in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, right? So these are just regular vines. This is what vines do. But in our modern world, lacking energy, vines will find something and wrap around it very slowly, right? But in a world that's electrically charged, where spirit and life are just bringing everything to life and, you know, creating gigantism all over the place, you'll see plants moving about very quickly, growing to gigantic sizes. And you'll have to be careful. You'll have to learn the new qualities of the plant species and how to interact with them. All right, so we go back to Wednesday and Pugsley. It's their turn at the talent show. And they're basically sort of dressed up as these sort of gypsy pirate type characters who are sword fighting with one another. Pugsley's missing an eye and stuff. They're gouging each other. They're slashing at each other. They're retelling actual history and true stories. And the family loves it. The rest of the audience is just mortified, right? They're just poured all this blood all over the people up front. And they're just like, oh my God. You know, they don't even know how to process what they're watching. And this is true history. Okay, this is not. This is a cartoon. This is fanciful. Okay, this is how we retell it. This is what our actual history, we change it into this type of stuff. But the real history is more realistic, I'll say. Survival implies that there is an element of death, believe it or not. Okay, there being an element or a risk of dying is what makes life all the more worth living. It makes life fun and purposeful, okay? If life is just handed to you on a silver platter and you don't go through any types of trials and tribulations and problems and issues and dangers and hardships, right? That's not really life. Or like they say, one of my favorite quotes is from Braveheart. Braveheart, Mel Gibson's character, he says, "Every man dies. Not every man really lives," right? Which is what they're showing us, an element of that too. So they stand up and they're like, yes, the truth. Awesome, wonderful, beautiful, exactly how we taught it to you. Perfect. And all the other parents are just like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And then they have a party. They have like a family reunion, a family get together at Mount Meru. This is the Council of the Gods. This is Olympus, etc. One of those is Cousin It, right? Now remember, It represents that the plasma strands that come down from above. That's seen as the hair of the sky god or gods or whoever, right? This heavenly cosmic hair that falls down and looks to be cut off whenever that dome goes back up or that electromagnetic barrier goes back up. It traps in and cuts off the hair that falls down into our world, which is plasma that comes down from Medusa or however you'd like to see it, right? Loki, right? Loki as the blue beam is seen as being responsible for cutting off the hair of the gods. So Cousin It comes out. You can also see his hat too, or her hat. I don't know if it's a boy or girl, but Cousin It's hat has a spider web on it, right? So he's all hair, all strands of hair. This also symbolizes the rapid growth, right? Regeneration, right? Hair is going to grow much faster. So not a lot of people are, it's not going to be popular to get a hair cut when your hair grows very fast or whatever, right? I imagine that if you live in a world that's energetically charged and your skin and your cells are regenerating on overdrive, that your hair will probably grow very long and that people will just let their hair grow out and maybe put it back in a ponytail or a bun or let it grow or whatever, right? So there's a hair will grow out much further when the fountain of youth is restored. Lurch basically represents a zombie. I don't know. He's basically Frankenstein, right? So to me, he represents the dead who have come back to life, which we'll get back to towards the end of the movie. Also, during the family reunion, we find hints at legendary tribes of humans, different pockets where humans grew differently, right? Whenever you have electromagnetic influx, it can do different things, especially to those who are born in the womb. Now, I will tell you this. If you look at and compare ancient religions and family trees and whatnot, twins and even quadruplets and things like that used to be way more commonplace the further back in time we go. There were way more twins being born. It was uncommon, I believe, at a certain point in our ancient history for a person to just give birth to one child. Oftentimes, it was two. That's what an overamplified spirit can do to the womb, is it can produce two offspring instead of one. But sometimes those offspring would not separate. Then you get legendary tribes of humans that basically are sort of mutant versions of, you know, twins or whatever, which is conjoined twins. The Amora twins, represented by these two right here, they dance the mamushka, wearing all red, right? Paying homage to the place of the red sky. Whenever the energy reverses, we can see that the dome glows or lights up, especially the crater, the inverted crater above, which becomes like the all-seeing eye or whatever, becomes a light source for the world, becomes a new sun or new sunlight, at least one form of light source. There's many in the world to come. They dawn red, which is harkens back to the time of magic, whenever Grandmother Spider comes down from above and spreads her legs all over the place. That didn't sound right. Grandmother Spider comes down and you know what I mean. It's like spider symbolism. I already messed that up. I'm blushing now. Anyways, that's the mother symbolism, right? And the mamushka in Russian, in ancient Russian, right? Going all the way back to the times when the Tartarians walked about and made their home in the motherland or Russia. The mamushka means mother. Let me zoom it out a little bit so you can see that. See that? So mamushka is an ancient word in Russia that means mother, right? The motherland, etc. This is not the dude that played Batman either. I don't know who this is, but it looks just like him. Here's another conjoined twins too. I missed this one many times because we just focus on the two women, but there's two men who are also conjoined twins. So they show us that. Now, the lawyer goes to the judge. Now, the lawyers and the judge, the legal-minded people, right? So, for example, all of us from this world, we're used to laws, and that's our form of spellcraft, right? So you have to imagine if the nobles escape this world and, you know, they leave during the apocalypse and they blast off in their spaceships and stuff to go to other worlds, or presidents or whoever, they're used to, their mindset is legality. Their mindset are these laws of the ocean or maritime laws, trade laws, basically to make money. So he says, how would you like to get rid of the Adamses for good, right? So that this is our history, I believe, right? When we had those heroes of old, those superheroes, those who survived prior cataclysms, right? But those people who were born into that world didn't have all of those superpowers and abilities and, you know, all of those types of things. And they wanted to get rid of the old world survivors. So they used these laws and they used craftiness against them, basically. And he says, this is a restraining order to keep you out. And the judge happily signs the restraining order to keep the Adamses away from their home or Mount Meru. This is also a type of being kicked out of the Garden of Eden, right? And being forced to spread out towards the southern boundaries of the world. The judge approves, and he's laughing, playing with his balls on the desk. That's basically, he's wearing all black. He's one of the sorcerers or wizards of the modern world. These are your judges, okay? The judges in the ancient biblical times, they were seen as being like superheroes, right? They were the ones who would judge the rest of the people or whatnot, like Samson. In the Old Testament, right? Nowadays, their power lies in just people's own beliefs, like money. Like money has no value. No paper money is worthless. The only value it has is what you believe it has. The only power that these people have is what we believe that they have and what we give to them, basically. So he pours out all these little spheres back onto the table, laughing his butt off. And then they go back to the house. They get back in, trying to rescue Morticia, who is kidnapped. And Fester grabs this book to use it as a weapon. It's the Hurricane book, and it says Nightmare from Above. So Fester, who represents the electricity that comes down from above, right? He opens up this Hurricane book. And like we said, the books represent reality. So in the movie, when they open up a book, it actually comes to life and all these winds blow out of the book and the book comes to life, just like this movie one day will come to life, okay? For those of you, I believe, for those of you who survive the apocalypse, you'll meet or become the Addams family yourself, all right? You'll experience all of the craziest parts of fiction that you ever thought. Every movie you've ever seen will all of a sudden manifest before you. And you'll talk about the times when that wasn't real. So he opens up the book and all this wind starts to blow and electricity comes out of it. This represents the world storm once more. You'll notice it's blue electricity that comes up out of this book that attacks the bad guys, representative of, you know, the nobility class or whatever, and they start getting sucked up into the sky or up into the air. They float, they lift up, and there's this worldwide storm on a microcosmic scale. Fester gets hit by the blue beam of electricity, or this hand that reaches out and sort of docks with his head, right? Which I also believe that this happens, right? That during this time, people can get possessed by plasma, right? Whether for the good or the bad, and it can amplify their spirits, right? It can also cause amnesia. So many people that wake up after the world storm passes who have survived, some people sleep right through it. But those people that wake up, oftentimes they will wake up with such trauma, or they will have been zapped and their brains actually scrambled, causing them to have amnesia and forgetting all about the world that they just came from. They won't know who they are. They don't know what just happened. They don't know what's going on, right? They'll have to look at their own tattoos to try to figure it out, or clues that they may have left themselves. They'll wake up with worldwide amnesia and not remember the world that they just left, starting all over in the new world. So Fester gets zapped. He already has amnesia. So the electricity brings those memories back. The blue beam of electricity, which is what this represents, brings back the memories of the ancient of days, or the ancient times, the olden times, right? Times long forgotten. This blue beam of light is what sparks the imagination to remember our ancient oblivion, which is what I write about. So he gets zapped by the blue beam, and it brings his true self back. He doesn't have to hide in this corporate world full of lawyers and judges and legalese and things like that. He remembers his origins. He remembers who he is and what he's about. And Fester is an Adams, a mighty man of old. So we get back to what time of the year it is now. At the end of the movie, it's Halloween, which is basically the exact same time as Christmas, or it's the same set apart type. It represents a holy time. A set-apart time, a time when the ancients, they knew that apocalyptic events would happen. They knew that the dead would rise. They knew that zombies could come up out of the graves. They knew that monsters would walk the earth. So this gives rise to these particular times as the seasons shift from cycle to cycle. These particular times when the world would depressurize and zombies would walk the world once more, right? And the children in the modern world are screaming at the reality, right? They're not scaring anybody. Nobody's scared. The real monsters, by the way, they're not going to be scared. I know people have said, we just did a Halloween episode. People are like, well, we dress up now to try to trick the monsters into thinking that we're one of them. Believe me, you're not tricking anybody, okay? Like, real monsters can smell you. Real monsters and plasma have plasma vision, spirit vision. They can see your aura and soul. You're not tricking anybody by dressing up, right? Either you're trying to fool God and dress up all super nice and put on your Sunday best, or you're trying to fool the monsters and pretend like you're a zombie or you're Spider-Man or you're whatever, right? You're not fooling anybody when the real monsters come. So, Uncle Fester poses for a picture with Pugsley, who dresses up like Uncle Fester. He puts the light bulb in his mouth and it turns on because he is electric. His spirit is amplified, right? Just like ours will be one day too. If your spirit becomes amplified to this degree, it's very likely that your eyes would also shine and emit beams of light whenever you open your eyes in the dark. And so they decide to play a game for Halloween, and it's called Wake the Dead. Wake the Dead! Wake the Dead! Yes, on Halloween, that's the time when the dead rise. Or that's the time when the dead can rise, I should say, okay? I personally don't believe that Halloween is something that does happen every year. I don't believe the Dia de los Muertos, or the Day of the Dead, or all of these, Pentecost, or the Holy Spirit, or the time of ghosts, or whatever. I don't believe that does happen every year, okay? I don't believe in that. I believe that we recognize it at those times, because those are the times when it can happen, right? These are the traditions that have been laid across for us that we are to celebrate and observe certain times of the year, when we should gather together and hide inside of our houses or structures and light candles and stuff, just in case the apocalypse does come. Because if we abide by those things and we are observant to those ancient traditions or, commandments that our forefathers and mothers have passed on to us, then we are seen as being obedient, listening to our elders. And therefore, whenever the world depressurizes, we're not caught off guard and we're outside on vacation, walking around and just start floating and get sucked up into the sky and eaten by some horrific sky god. We're inside. We're in a place of safety, and we have done all we can to protect our houses and our dwellings from plasma that may try to come in and electrocute us, etc. And we're prepared with candles that we've lit when the sky goes dark. All of these things have an origin. So they go around trying to wake the dead. She says, "Uncle Atlas, wake up." Atlas, right? Representing that blue beam of energy that shoots up and branches out at the top, looking like it's holding up an inverted dome above it, which it is. And everybody knows that Morticia, all throughout this movie, Morticia and Gomez, they cannot keep their hands off of each other. And it's not just because, you know, they vibe with each other so much, or, you know, they just really like each other. That's a part of it, okay, which is awesome. I hope that many of you can find something like that, because it's a beautiful thing. And it's rare in this world that we live in, during these times that we live in. God, is this rare or is this rare, okay? But I will say this, that whenever we go into this shift, remember where I said your souls are energetically charged and your body is regenerating and you feel like a kid? You're rejuvenated. Your vitality is restored. So imagine sex drives, right? That's why the gods, I'm just telling the truth. That's why the ancient gods and heroes of old are seen to be so promiscuous. And, you know, sex seems to be a normal part of their world, and the world that they're from is because that was a normal part of their world. They're energetically charged. You know what I mean? So they're all over each other. And that is the Addams Family. And that's our truth in movies for tonight. Thank you so much for joining me. Until next time, I'm Jay Dreamers, saying good vibes and goodbye. For me, if I
good.